Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Reminding you as we jump into this conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. www.mecu.com is how to find them. Anthony and I are joined right now by Michael Greenberger. Michael Greenberger was the principal deputy associate attorney general under Clinton and Janet Reno. He was a former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He is now the founding director of the Center for Health and Homeland Security at the University of Maryland School of Law, where he is a professor. We're also joined by Professor Bill Black, who is associate professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, the Institute for Fraud Prevention, from 2005 to 2007. And Michael Greenberger and Bill Black, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to Facebook and throw your questions there, and we will get to them as well. We're going to talk about LIBOR, this first part of our program. Figure out how our interest rates are determined. You know, we trust our banking system to set today's rate on the basis of what they think might be the future of money, not to kind of manipulate the interest rate so they can place bets on the future of what money will be worth.
For a huge return,
but that seems like what has happened. So, Michael Greenberger, could you start just by first of all taking us back and describing for us what is LIBOR? What are we talking about here?
Well, LIBOR is an acronym for the London Interbank Offered Rate. And while this may be a strange-sounding term to many people, it is actually similar kinds of rates that are established in other foreign countries really is the benchmark rate that is charged to people when they pay interest on various credit facilities that they have, mortgages, credit cards, bank loans, and other instruments. So it's a critically important rate that determines how much money we pay on loans that we have or other very complicated instruments. And it affects roughly $400 trillion notional value in financial instruments that are traded around the world.
And Bill Black, I'm glad you joined us again today. Welcome to the show as well.
Thank you.
So, but what's going on here is that, let's talk a bit about what's happening here and what this scandal says that has erupted.
Well, what has happened is a matter of active dispute, particularly in the United Kingdom, particularly after testimony that was just given, in which the former chief operating officer said that one of the things that happened is that we put in a false lower LIBOR rate on the dollar transactions in particular because the government told me to do that. I actually told my boss, the CEO, to do that, and he told me to do it, and so I was a good soldier and I did that. So his former boss, that's their Diamond as opposed to our Jamie Dimon, and the guy who was the deputy, the number two guy at the Bank of England, which has now become their new super regulator again, and was expected to become the number one guy, well, his fate is now up because he contests that and said, no, you must have misunderstood. we wouldn't give an order like that.
So, Michael Greenberger, this is it seems to me, the tip of a very dangerous iceberg that we're about to investigate. And no one knows where this is going to lead, but this could make other things we've seen in the last few years around Wall Street and financing almost minuscule, minor in comparison.
Well, in terms of criminal conduct, that is almost certainly the case. The initial action taken by the United States government, both the Commodity Futures Trading Commission on the civil side and the Department of Justice on the criminal side, was to extract penalties from Barclays Bank. But the conspirators here almost certainly ranged across a series of banks. LIBOR is established by an auction process. Over the years, there are 16 to 18 of the world's largest banks involved, and the information that's coming out now makes it fairly clear that the banks or people in the banks were conspiring with one another to set the rate, often for their own betterment. There were two kinds of rates that seemed, or two phases of this rigging of the rates that's been at issue. One is rigging the rates from 2005 to 2009 so that the banks were able to win bets against their customers in so-called interest rate swaps. And then in another phase, maybe 2007, 2008, where the banks were setting their rate far below what it should have been so that they would appear to be financially stronger and therefore, in the case of Barclays, not a candidate for nationalization by the UK government. The New York Times ran a story, front-page story recently, that makes it clear that effectively the settlement with Barclays for somewhere in the neighborhood of $450 million is almost a grant of immunity to them for cooperating, and they are expected as part of a deal not to bring prosecution against them, to cooperate in other prosecutions against other banks. And if the New York Times is to be believed, we're going to see indictments of officers, employees of other banks coming down the road who participated in this rate rigging.
Bill and Michael, this is Anthony McCarthy. I'm very curious, and I think our listeners are probably curious, about the indictments that may be coming down, Barclays information, and especially, Michael, you were at the commission. I'm curious that we're talking about a very specific time here, but is it possible that this practice may have, in some way, shape, or form, they may have been setting these rates, they may have been setting themselves up for better return? Could this have been going on a lot longer than the time period that we found out about in the New York Times and in some of the testimonies that we've been seeing?
Bill Black?
Yeah, I'm talking to Bill Black. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the short answer is yes. The leaks, as Michael has just explained, say 2005 mm-hmm. is what you already have admissions from Barclays, that it goes that far back. But, of course, Barclays' story is that they were the least bad of a whole group of cheaters. And so when that all started, we don't know. Now, we've been using this bet metaphor, but that's a bit misleading. This is something you get to do after the fact. In other words, these are giant banks. Barclays is $1 trillion. And they make all kinds of trading bets as a matter of course every day. And after they make the bet, they can decide, you know, would we win more or lose more if the interest rate, LIBOR, was higher or lower? So it's as if you could redefine balls and strikes after the pitches has already been made in baseball. You'd win a whole lot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, a lot. And, Michael, what is the likelihood with your expertise in looking in your crystal ball that if indictments are handed down, or are they brought up, Mark? I can't remember the rule. If indictments are – how successful? We're talking about huge banks, and we're talking about individuals, and we're talking about a process that I don't think – it takes a lot for people to get their hands around, their arms around. What's the likelihood the government could be successful in prosecuting?
Well, in settling with one of the things that the government, Justice Department extracted from Barclays as a condition of their agreement not to prosecute Barclays was an agreed-upon statement of facts as to what happened. And that statement's about 23 pages long, and in it there are emails between traders and banks, between traders in a bank and the persons within the bank that were responsible for calling in the estimated interest rate, saying, hey, today it would be better if we had a lower interest rate. I'll do better in my trades. And then there are other emails that suggest conspiracy among traders in different banks. Those emails are pretty damning. And this is the Justice Department had a very bad record in terms of bringing financial crimes in this meltdown. The first and only, really, case they brought was against hedge fund traders at Bear Stearns, causing the Bear Stearns debacle, and they were unsuccessful in their prosecution. The Bear Stearns traders were acquitted. Bill and I have both been very concerned about the fact that the department has, that was back in 2007, they've, you know, through the meltdown up to now, have done almost nothing to bring prosecutions. But this seems to me, if based on the agreed-upon statement of facts that they got out of Barclays, that the evidence here is very strong and very simple about agreed-upon trading between the banks and essentially rigging this on a daily basis, this very important measure. So I believe that this case, it sounds very complicated, but as Bill said, you make a bet, and then after you make the bet, you're pretty much able to determine the measure of the bet to see whether you won or lost. The emails here seem to be so striking. And you have Barclays, it appears at this point in time, as a condition for getting off lightly, is prepared to turn what I would call state's evidence. So I think you're going to see other banks racing in trying to get settlements. And maybe they'll settle, but they'll have to settle for more. But ultimately, if the New York Times is to be believed, there are going to be, for the first time since the meltdown and since this Bear Stearns criminal debacle back in the early part of the meltdown, there seems to be real activity on the part of the Justice Department here. It's been long waited for, and I'm hopeful that it is going to be productive. The New York Times called this, in effect, the October surprise for the President Obama.
Yes.
I mean, people have been waiting for this to happen, and these indictments are reported to be handed down in September and October of this year, right during the election period.
And speaking of that, one of the things the Times talked about was that Barclays Bank, somebody implicated, somebody at Barclays Bank implicated the Fed, the New York Fed, and when that being in cahoots with this, and that at that time, Timothy Geithner was the head of the Fed, and now he's our Secretary of Treasury, complicating matters for Barack Obama. But also, could this implicate the Fed, and could this implicate Timothy Geithner? And what would happen if that happened?
Well, the current state of it doesn't indict him in that sense. In another sense, of course, it shows a very weak response. So what we know at this point, we think, is that Barclays, on multiple occasions, people from Barclays go to the New York Fed and say, hey, this is a scam, LIBOR. Our own bank is involved in the scam. And the New York Fed does not act appropriately, but it acts far better than the British authorities. And so it looks, you know, in comparison, kind of sort of better. In other words, the New York Fed gets this word, pretty much ignores it the first time. Second time around, it goes, and here we need more facts, to the banks and says, hey, you know, what should we do? And we don't know whether it went to the three big U.S. banks that were involved in setting LIBOR. In which case, that's, you know, could be really bad because they, in essence, could be leaking to them the fact that they had learned of this violation. In any event, the banks propose, here's how you might improve LIBOR, and here's a big surprise. The way they suggest improving it would have given U.S. banks more power. And the New York Fed then sends essentially those same ideas that the banks gave over to the Bank of England. Now, what we haven't heard is that the New York Fed ever made a criminal referral. Michael, have you heard whether they called the CFTC?
First of all, Bill is absolutely right. The New York Fed or Geithner, what they did is very nuanced, and it's a matter of interpretation about whether they did enough, and I think you're going to hear a lot about that over the next several days and weeks. But they did. One of the things people were asking me when this thing broke, well, what could the New York Fed have done? Well, one of the most important things it should have done was there's something at the time called the President's Working Group on Financial Markets. Now it's called, after the passage of the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Bill, the Financial Stability Oversight Council. It's chaired by the Secretary of the Treasury, and every major federal regulator is a member of it. It was created by executive order prior to Dodd-Frank. It's now a statutory interagency commission. And what I said was one of the things that Geithner had, or the New York Fed and Geithner had a responsibility to do, was to report this problem to the interagency task force. Now, it just so happens there's, about a five-page memo in the documents that were turned over by the New York Fed. There's a memo to an interagency task force. It's not as clear as one might like, but it is an argument that they did tell all the other federal regulators that this was a problem. Painted most favorably for the New York Fed and Geithner is that as soon as that report was made, the CFTC, this is back in June of 2008, this is now President George W. Bush's CFTC, which was certainly no aggressive agency, but surprisingly enough, they did open the investigation. And it was that investigation that ultimately brought in the Department of Justice and led to the settlement that we heard about last week. So that means it took them about 4 years to get this thing going and get it completed. The argument on the side of those who say who are trying to defend the time lag is that it was very, very complicated. Barclay wasn't completely cooperative, and it took that amount of time to make the case. But there will be lots of questions of whether the New York Fed did enough, whether the it's a little bit reminiscent of the Joe Paterno problem, where Paterno finds out the bad stuff and says,
"Right,
look, I'll take care of this. I'll get it into the right hands." We know now that, the right hands here didn't turn their back on this problem. That was what led to the enforcement actions we heard about last week. And what the New York Times will tell us is going to lead to further indictments or indictments as a result of this. But the question is, did they do enough fast enough? This was a very, very big deal. It affected trillions of dollars of transactions. And was the alarm sounded loudly enough? Did the regulators move quickly enough? That's what we have to wait and see.
I mean, well, one of the things that really is really disturbing, I mean, people in America are really tired of what's being manipulated by the large banking industry in America, the internationally in America as well. I mean, here we have what this could involve. I mean, we're looking at something that started in maybe 2005, and who knows when it really ended, if it ever did. And this is like the banks coming together to rig LIBOR to assure that these banks' bets on the derivatives that they play around with will be profitable for them, and we get it in the end. I mean, this is really what's happening here. And so the question is, well, that's number one. I mean, I think that Americans really want to see something much harder happening to banks. I think that maybe banks, Bill Black and then Michael Greenberger, have forgotten what they're there for.
Oh, no, the bankers have figured that out quite well.
No confusion there.
Absolutely no confusion. It's just blowing apart their story, right? And their story is we are incredibly wealthy because of three things. One, we're much smarter than you folks. Two, we work a whole lot harder than you folks. And three, we love risk where you fear risk. and therefore we're superior human beings and we get massive amount of money, and the financial sector should get up to 40% of the total profits of corporations of the United States. You know, this is a story that never made any economic sense. And the more that comes out, the more you realize, of course, that the bankers always love a sure thing. They don't want risk. There's no risk when you get to decide after the fact what interest rate would make your book work better, right, and give you a bigger profit. All of us would make money if we got to do it after the fact. I can pick stocks the day afterwards really well.
But, you know, one of the things you've talked about before, Michael Greenberger, is that banks, I think you said this, I don't want to misquote you, but you'll correct me, that when you talk about the social value that banks have to our economy as being very limited, what does that mean, and what is it we're missing here?
Well, that's an excellent point. Just to back up a little bit and to follow up on what Bill said and what you've said, Mark, because you stated it very well. In the initial stages, this looks sort of complicated, but when it's broken down, the biggest banks in the world were rigging their own bets so that they would come out ahead. I think once you get through figuring out what LIBOR is and everything else, this is a pretty simple problem, and it's something when the predicate facts are well known, the rigging your own betting is something that the American public can understand. And I'm hoping that if complication was what was keeping the Department of Justice all these years from bringing big cases, that the fact that this can be simplified and the evidence may be as to have been in emails between traders, that we will finally get some vindication here. Secondly, this is not just the United States' problem.
Right.
Japan, Germany, the European Union, Canada, and the English are all aggressively pursuing this. So the United States just can't lag behind, because they'll look like real idiots if they aren't up and up with the rest of the country. The final thing I just wanted to say here is there are also private lawsuits that are being brought, some of which were brought long before this became an issue that is in the front pages of our newspapers. And ironically, for those of us close to Baltimore, the city of Baltimore brought a lawsuit a year ago complaining of the fact that they had lost substantial amounts of money through this bid rigging process. So one of the first lawsuits that was brought in this regard was by the city of Baltimore. There will be, I believe the lawsuits that will be brought over this will make the tobacco litigation look like a walk in the woods. So this, to my mind, has the appearance of finally nailing in a clear-cut, simple way the antisocial value of these banks. The value of banks is they keep our deposits, they hold them for us, they make a little bit of profit off that themselves, they loan that money back to the community through loans to businesses, loans to people going to school, loans to people who want to buy houses. That's what the banks, the social value of banks. These banks don't want to do that anymore. What they want to do is bet for their own book, these huge reckless bets. When they win them, they take the money and use it for themselves and their own profits. When they lose, they turn to the taxpayer and say, boy, if we fail, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, so you better cover our losses. And that's what we did in the fall of 2008 through the winter of 2009 to the tune of trillions of dollars. Well, the American people have had it. The American people have had it generally. When you look at the underpinnings of the Tea Party, a lot of the anger of the Tea Party is that we spent so much money saving banks that had no value in saving us. Mm. When you look at Occupy Wall Street, that's what their message is, too. So I think if the Justice Department brings these indictments in September and October, whatever problems Timothy Geithner has, I think it's going to help the president substantially in this election.
That's interesting. That's if the president of the United States can finally understand that the Wall Street is not on his side.
He can look at his own bank deposits.
That's right.
That
bankers made two critical mistakes. One, they made this an antitrust, not just a banking issue. And two, they really screwed up America. And when it's in antitrust, it's no longer a question of, you know, is Timothy Geithner going to allow the action to go forward? Because we can bring a whole bunch of civil actions and we can get treble damages. And we're talking, as Michael said, in notional value, tens of trillions of dollars of transactions. So the losses can be monumental. The United States allows far broader what's called discovery. That means you can get more documents, you can get more testimony under oath of the bankers than you can in the United Kingdom. You've seen in just a few days how much comes out once you start asking questions and putting witnesses against each other. And so we were just at the beginning of what may be found in all of this, and the liability can be extraordinary, and I don't think banks are going to make very sympathetic defendants. And you don't have the protection of all the laws that have been put in place in the United States to make it very difficult to bring a securities fraud action. Those same laws don't exist in antitrust in the same way. And so the liability can be extraordinary.
I want to thank you both for spending our time with us tonight. This has been really fascinating, and we'll come back to this. Bill Black, Associate Professor of Economics and Law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and Michael Greenberger, Director of the Center for Health and Homeland Security at the University of Maryland School of Law. Deeply appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you both again very soon.
Good. Nice.
Thank you.
To you, Mark.
Thank you.
Take care.
Anthony.
Take care.
And Anthony and I will be back. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mary Alice Ernish, who is head of Audit Baltimore. Do I have that correctly, Anthony?
That's right.
Who'll be joining us from City Hall. So stay with us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're about to tackle some local politics. Stay with us.